Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We're just going over the rules today. Very nice to have you all with us. We are here on a Wednesday morning. It's the 6th of November. It's the day after Election Day. We will talk about what has gone on at the polls, and we have a lot to talk about. We have a wonderful panel, as always. Let me introduce them to you. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Hi, boss. How you doing?
I am well. Right back to you. And I thank you. Everything going well? You doing well?
Every day is another challenge, and we're all doing well.
Excellent. That's good. I welcome you, and I'm glad you are here. Times Union columnist Chris Churchill is here as well. He is ready to go. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
How are you?
Tired.
Yeah, yeah. We're all up late last night. Investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good.
Did you survive yesterday?
I was a little nervous walking in today looking for women on the sidewalk.
It was the talk of the town. Corporate attorney Rich Honan joins us. Hello, Rich.
How are you?
Well, we're very happy you're here.
Yeah, I'm sorry I missed it last week.
That's
all right. I apologize.
I understand. You had a very good excuse. And I have to say, you know, you could come every day. We loved having you.
I appreciate that.
All right.
Thank you.
Terry Gibson, you can come once a week. How are you?
Well, thank you. I really do feel privileged. Thank you so much.
I'm thrilled to have you here. Communications professor and former New York State Senator, our Wednesday regular, Terry Gibson. Good morning.
Good morning.
Always good to see you. Thank you very much. Let us begin and talk about what's happening. And I guess it's hard not to start with the news out of Virginia and out of Kentucky. The Democrats won last night. When I was just getting to bed, I was seeing, you know, that they were talking about Kentucky being kind of questionable. And then this morning, now just that news really is that it's a very big win for the Democrats in Kentucky. Of course, I know we'll talk about this, but then you have to wonder, you know, what this means for McConnell. So that'll be cool. Let's talk about that. And also Virginia. Alan, what did you make of the results overall?
Well, Kentucky is very interesting. Shows that they know how to pick a person. You know, it went red except for the governorship. This guy was extremely unpopular. He only lost by, you know, a small margin, less than a percent. And so we'll have to see whether or not they try to rob it. And I do think that there is a possibility they will. And I'll tell you why this is very important. The president went, he put his entire reputation on the line. He stood up and said, don't let them do this to me. I mean, it was really unbelievable. So the Republican lost. The president lost a big one. And in Virginia, and that was a huge win for the Democrats because it puts them in position when the redistricting comes up, just like the Democrats in New York took the Senate, and they'll be there when the redistricting comes up. So I think the results are pretty fascinating.
Rosemary?
Kentucky, I don't read a whole lot into it, as Alan suggested. This was a really unpopular governor who took a stance against health care that was really unpopular. I'm glad that Trump's appearance did not swing it the other way. It might have. But this was, you know, people know their local people and what they stand for. For the same reason, McConnell could be in trouble because he's not been a local representative for a long time. He has been involved with national issues only. And putting a whole bunch of conservatives on the judiciary, that's okay for Kentucky, but there's other things they want. He has not delivered. So I do think he's in trouble, but not because there's some swing away from Trump. Virginia is harder to read as anything other than good news for Democrats, but it has also been trending that way for a little bit of a while. It's gone from red to purple, and now it's more blue. It'll be interesting to see what changes come about over the next few years under Democratic control.
Terry?
I think anytime a president puts their political capital mm-hmm. behind a candidate and they lose, which it looks like they have, I think that means something. I think this is very damaging to Trump. I agree this is, you know, probably not that unexpected in a state like Kentucky, but it still means something that a president has supported someone that has lost. And I think we're going to see that damage unfold in the coming days. What I think we're going to see, and I think Alan touched on this, is we're going to see a pushback from the Republicans, and I think they are going to try to do something to steal back this election. I think we're not. I think it's going to be several weeks, if not months, before this is resolved.
How close
and the
is
reason,
it?
And the
close.
Reason, you know, less than a percentage point. But what I'm fascinated by is, let's assume Donald Trump loses in 2020. The question to me is, will he try to rob it? Will he? Is this guy beneath doing the next bad thing in his life, which is trying to rob an American election? I believe there's been hanky-panky in Florida, for example, for years. Now, whether that happens in Kentucky could be a harbinger of what we may see in a presidential election.
And I agree with you, and it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next couple of weeks. But I mean, what are the actual things that can be done, Alan? I mean, what can they do?
The absentee ballots can show up. You know what I mean?
Yes,
they can show up.
But Alan, quote unquote, show up.
That doesn't mean they robbed it. I mean, absentee ballots are ballots just like any other ballot, and if they go a certain way, that doesn't mean that somebody you can't just automatically.
But what if it goes to the court?
The Supreme Court?
No, which court? No, come on. You know, Chris, I'm a huge fan of yours. You know,
there you go.
There you go. Brace yourself.
Yeah.
Put on my helmet.
But you know, it has not been unknown in American politics that people have lead under their fingernails, or that votes change, or that votes get lost.
I understand that, but yeah, but you can't just say that, you know, absentee ballots are de facto suspicious. I mean, we have several local elections around here that are hanging on the counts of absentee ballots, and that's just part of the process. It's not, you can't just say, well, these absentee ballots came in and the Republican won, so therefore there was hanky-panky.
This whole discussion strikes me as incredibly premature. Democrats are so far from winning over Trump by a big margin or a small margin that let's worry about that first.
But no, I'm worried, Rosemary. You know, I have great respect for you, Rosemary.
Here's the helmet.
But
the transfer of the helmet.
But for us to deny that American politics have been replete with hanky-panky is just to put a blindfold over our eyes.
I am curious, and I want, Rich, you can start with this, and then we can go around the room. But what does this mean if you're Mitch McConnell and you're already having a tough race and you see this happening in Kentucky, in your home state? The president has come down, given it everything he has, and it's still not working. What do you make of it?
Well, first, I defer to everybody else on the panel because you guys know the national scene much better. I'll say a couple of things. First, I agree with Terry.
Not up on your Kentucky politics?
Shame on you.
I will say on the Virginia side, I'm actually pretty pleased with what happened there because my daughter was part of the campaigns a couple of years ago where they turned the Virginia State House over when she was part. Her and her people at Emily's List, where they had five women took got elected to the state house, and she worked real hard on that. So I'm kind of pleased about that. I will say on the national, I agree with Terry. Look, anytime a president puts his or her prestige out there, excuse me, and it doesn't work, that's a blow. I'm sure that they'll spin it and say, well, it would, he made it much closer than it was going to be. And I think they'll probably make it what Rosemary was saying. This guy was personally unpopular. The health care, I thought he also aroused the ire of the teachers. Which is never a great thing.
Never a good idea.
And the other thing about Trump, is he'll as we all know, he'll double down. He doesn't necessarily, he doesn't necessarily back down from something because he thinks he's going to lose. He'll go out there usually after his aides have told them, told him this thing's over, and he'll go out there. So he doesn't mind doing that. What I will say is I think that the voters are going to be more forgiving, Rosemary, on the federal level with, say, a McConnell or with a senator or a representative who's a little more absent from the state if they perceive that person has national power that a newcomer would not have. So that's why I'm saying I think it might not be as bad for McConnell as you might think from the fact that, you know, the governor lost.
Hey, you're exactly right. I mean, I grew up in Massachusetts, and every 6 years, Kennedy's in trouble, Kennedy's in trouble. And, you know, there were a lot of reasons for people to be tired of him, but he kept winning. I mean, Massachusetts is a very liberal state, in the same way that Kentucky's a very conservative state. Mm. He kept winning in part because people liked the, you know, the power and influence and what he could do for the state in terms of money, and they liked having someone from Massachusetts on the national scene.
Right.
Hey, I not only come from Massachusetts, I live in Massachusetts. And I want you to know that Kennedy was close to, I mean, you know, I don't know how many times have I said that there are pictures in people's houses all over this country of Jesus and of John F. Kennedy. That's a little bit different.
Yeah, but you know that Ted Kennedy had a lot of baggage with him that he was carrying around in those campaigns. And in that Romney race, I forget which year it was, mid-2000s maybe? I mean, people really thought Kennedy was in trouble.
But in New York, we adopted Hillary, who was not even from New York originally to begin with, for the same idea that she would have clout as soon as she walked in, and right. That was a good thing. But Hillary and the Kennedys all were careful to give some stuff to their home state. They made a big deal about it. What has Mitch done? It's hurting
we don't know.
Now,
I mean,
because Amy McGrath does know, and she's saying he's done nothing for you.
Yeah,
she's made it a point of the campaign.
Yeah, but our view of it might be different if we lived in Kentucky. We don't, you know, we're not aware of what he's doing on a day-to-day level.
Well, the other thing that will be interesting to see in terms of how Trump's candidate this time apparently lost, it'll be interesting to see how the other Republican candidates that are now mounting campaigns for House representatives and for the Senate, how many of them reach out to him to come to their districts and give speeches and give supports. Is that going to continue as it has, or are we going to see a fall off of people that really want to stand beside this person on the stage?
Well, let's remember he lost by 1%, less than 1%, not even 1%.
And he was deeply unpopular.
And five other Republicans won, right?
Well,
including the Attorney General, the first black American in the state's history.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So how, you know, it could really be, to be honest, that Trump actually helped the guy.
Well, that's what Trump's claiming.
Because he would have lost by a lot more.
That's a shocker.
That's exactly what Trump's saying.
Yeah, but a loss is
a loss.
But it does prove that a Republican can lose in Kentucky. So, I mean, it should scare McConnell in that regard.
There was also a Libertarian candidate who got 2% of the vote, which is interesting, too.
Mm-hmm.
That changed things. But you're right. It's 0.4% right now.
Mm-hmm.
Between
so it's
the two.
Lost even more
ground. There an automatic? Is it one of those states where it's an automatic?
No automatic.
Okay. You have to ask for it.
Challenger has to ask for it, and it goes to a court to decide.
Yeah, but, you know,
so
we're not talking about it. I'm sorry, Rosemary. We're talking about the president of the United States. We're talking about Donald Trump coming in and putting his name beside another person and saying, this guy is going to win. And he apparently has not won. And that's a big deal.
Do you think that, Terry, even though he wasn't in the race the whole way, it was like a last minute, I'm in trouble, come on down and help. And there was a last minute appearance and tweeting. That's not the same as being invested.
Yeah, but he stood on the stage and he made all those awful comments that he makes and you know, he was abusive and just awful, and it didn't work. It did not work.
Did you all see it? I mean, he literally turned to the crowd, turned away, and said, "Don't let them do this to me," like a 10th grader. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, and it didn't work. They did it to him. That's my point, I guess.
They may have.
Well, we think so.
We'll see. And in our final moment here is any other takeaways from Election Day 2019 that anybody has? You can vote. You can now sell alcohol in the village in the town of Argyle.
Big upstate news.
Well, yes,
where everybody wears socks. But what about Troy?
Well, Troy's an interesting story too, and we don't.
We take about 15 minutes to explain it all.
Yeah.
But basically the incumbent Democrat won.
Right. Yeah. And we got ranked choice voting in New York City.
Another big deal.
A lot
of people are watching
that's
that.
I'd like to see that across the entire state. And so maybe that will be a movement for it to happen across the entire state.
Take 1 second to explain it. What does it mean?
Oh, I don't think I can explain that in 1 second.
You have
all right.
to.
I don't think I can. I let Alan do that.
Okay.
Nah.
Well, why don't we not put time limits on you, and I will go to a break. When we come back, we can talk about it. We welcome your letters to panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Terry Gibson, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Armeo, and Rich Honan all make up the group. It's wonderful to have you all here, and it's wonderful to have your letters as well. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and we go to those letters now. Ed checks in and says, I take little solace in close wins by Democrats. 51-49% means almost half the voting public still accepts the manifest lying, cheating, and perhaps treason by a charismatic demagogue and his sycophants. How and why? This is ultimately a sociological as well as a political question. The growth of modern totalitarianism, aided by technology, witness China and Russia, more than half the globe, is a threat to human freedom equal to climate change.
I think
Ed is despondent.
I think that letter nationalizes politics a little bit too much. I mean, this is a local race. It's not, you know, it wasn't Trump was not on the ballot. I mean, I think that's important to remember.
Well, but I do think that all the various polls we're seeing come out over the last week, to some degree, underline what the writer is saying there, that across the country there is still this very deep division, and much of the country is still very much in line with Trump.
And the division is pretty close, right? It's not like a 60-40 division on a lot of issues. It's a 51-49 division, you know. Terry, isn't it also that you still have to have a decent candidate? You know, I think the Republicans have learned that. They certainly learned that in Alabama no matter what swirling around nationally, you still have to have a good candidate
Good.
Is Donald Trump a good candidate?
Good and decent.
I was talking about, for example, the Kentucky guy.
And I think the Kentucky guy was not a good candidate. I mean, I think that's pretty obvious.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can't make, you still, I like the fact that people are still looking at it somewhat transactionally. I know it's not a word you guys always like, but I like the fact that they're looking at the guy on his merits and saying, hey, I'm a Republican, but I don't love the guy. You know, in Kentucky, for example.
Well, I don't know what I know about the Republican candidate in Kentucky, or the governor in Kentucky. He's still the governor. Was that, you know, his talking points and his attitude and his way of operating were very much in the spirit of Donald Trump.
I mean, right. It didn't work for him.
Yeah, but so
he prided himself on that. In fact, said, you know, Trump sells, Trump wins.
Yeah.
And again, I think that does say something, and that all of a sudden is not working for the voters. You know, I think we have to contemplate that.
He didn't govern as a Trump Republican, though. He talked the language, but he governed more as like a Paul Ryan type. You know, a very austerity kind of, you know, slashing programs kind of thing. And that really, I mean, for you know, say what you will about Trump, but that has not been part of his program. I mean, as we know, the debt and deficit are ballooning.
Well, that's just it. I mean, there's fundamental problems in everywhere, but there's fundamental problems in that state, lots of states, the pension, you know, deficit and things like that, that, you know, it's kind of hard to get around, you know, no matter who you are, I think.
I think voter turnout is also something to look at. The divide comes out as 60-40 when you look at it nationally, but then when we get to voting, it's down to 50-50. And that's showing that one side or another, and I haven't seen the figures yet, we haven't done the studies on who's coming out to vote.
You're saying on?
No, you know, I think that there are some universal things, like, for example, I think Chris will remember this, that when Andrew Cuomo decided when he got elected governor he was going to take on the teachers, and he did. He took on the teachers, and he really got hurt. So he made his peace with the teachers, and then they went away, and they all were good. Mm-hmm. Same thing happened in Kentucky. It was not Democratic or Republican.
Let's go to letters from Bill, or two letters. This one from Bill, who... The subject line is Kentucky tea leaves. Good comments by all. Joe's right about the Libertarian candidate siphoning votes from Bevins. Rich is on target, too. It might mean Senator McConnell is vulnerable, but the results by voting district shows that urban and minority districts went blue, suburbs were mostly red, and rural poor areas solid red. Still a lot like the national voting map pattern. And you certainly see that in the graphics of the map. And looking at the results from last night. Bob says, not to be forgotten in the flush of the Dems' victory in Virginia is that it is likely that the new Democratic-controlled legislature will soon vote to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment. That means the U.S. Constitution will be amended to guarantee equal rights after only 244 years.
Yes, I can't believe I didn't bring that up. That's very heartening news. Yay.
Zach writes, as Democrats across the country rush to gain support from organized labor, it's important to note that Virginia now has a real chance to repeal right to work and extend collective bargaining rights to public employees. The Democrats there would be foolish not to push these measures, as strong unions play a major role in electing Democrats. And finally, from Cameron, on Argyle election, you gave a quick mention of Argyle passing the Wett Amendment, which is great. But what was interesting to watch as a political observer was how the whole ballot broke down. And this is fascinating, actually. The question passed 75-25. The movement to not be a drive town started in the town Democratic Party. Two leaders of that party and big supporters of the movement ran for town seats and lost 66-33 to Republicans that didn't support the measure. Shows how strong party can be and how many voters support Democratic policies but stick by that old Republican title. And I think that is it for letters. We welcome yours, panel, at least the ones I have in front of me. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Let us go to revised testimony. Sondland, Gordon Sondland has, oh, for goodness sakes, hold on. I'm having computer issues, and I apologize for my
Well, he revised his testimony.
He revised his testimony
to say that you, yeah, Rich. maybe there really was a quid pro quo, because now I remember having a conversation with the folks from Ukraine saying that they probably needed to do this investigation for the money to flow.
So this is
pants
your,
on fire. Pants
I don't think
on
the word
fire.
Probably or maybe was used though, right? I mean, it was definitive. It actually definitive. Happened.
Well, oh yeah, no, he right, said that, yeah, but yeah. but he was saying that in that was his conversation. I don't think he said definitively that that's what he was told to say by the president.
How common is it for people to revise their testimony? Because it seems to me that if you go in there and lie under oath,
yeah,
and you don't get to come back in 2 weeks and say, you know what, I thought about it, I'm totally changing my story.
My parish priest suggested I come back and make this good with
it's
you.
It's the 2 weeks that so people do make mistakes. Okay, people sometimes and no, I'm saying people sometimes testify and you know you're prepared very well and you know you get all the statements that you've made before and whatever you said to you know the investigators. But, you know, I don't know how the hearings are being run. I don't know what the question is. People get nervous and people have you have a lot of things on your mind. So you make a mistake. But usually if you make a mistake, 2 weeks is an eternity. Usually what will happen is, yeah, a lot of times if I'm sitting next to a witness and she or he makes a mistake that I know, you know, I'll call a timeout and say, wait a minute, I heard you just say this, but. You know, I'll try and coach him along until somebody, you know, tells me to stop. But usually you'll fix it right away.
But these weren't mistakes. These were in his previous testimony. He said he couldn't recall any of these things
he
happening.
He was directly.
So he was obviously
he couldn't
refreshed.
Recall it.
I'm assuming. And that's the big missing part from the story. Like, what spurred this? Was he refreshed?
He was asked.
He said the testimony of others made him recall certain things.
I just don't know how he wasn't really admitting to a crime when he did this. I mean, or.
He was going to say, I forgot, and then I was refreshed, and then I remembered. I didn't mean to lie. I think he revised
in order to get out of it.
But the good news for him is that he revised charged. It in a way that's more helpful to the Democrats, so I don't think he's going to be looking at any charges. You know, if he revised it going the other way, yeah.
I also
yeah.
don't
so
think
they,
he's
going to
be looking
him.
At a long career in the Foreign Service either.
Because he looks like an older Michael Avenatti?
Well, that too. He's going to remind Trump of bad things in many ways, yeah, because he gave testimony that now is helpful to the Democrats. It also pointed out that Democrats were probably right to conduct those depositions in secrecy because he might have consulted with others before he gave his testimony. He was on the phone with Rick Perry, they said, just before he testified. And it was only after word leaked of what else came out from other people appearing before the committee that he changed his story.
It was a four-page sworn statement that was released yesterday. Originally, he said he never thought there was any precondition on the aid. Now, I said that resumption of the U.S. aid would likely not occur until Ukraine provided the public anti-corruption statement that we had been discussing for many weeks.
So I want to ask the lawyer a question. Lawyer, tell me something. When the word recall, I don't recall, that's different from it didn't happen, isn't it? I mean, isn't that a weasel word?
I think they both, well, certainly a definitive, it did not happen you know, I never had that conversation. It's a lot different from, you know, I don't recall having that conversation, or I remember speaking to the person, but I don't recall saying that. You know, I don't know what changed. You say that he heard other witnesses. I don't know why.
That's what he said.
Yeah, why would you not? You say, Rosemary, you said he was talking to other witnesses. That's what I would advise somebody to do. I would say, you know, talk to somebody who was party to these transactions. Go, you know, do all the things you're supposed to do. Go through your emails, you know, reconstruct your memory. I'm not saying up new stuff, but, you know,
remember
what happened.
It's obvious that he realized he was out there on a limb all by himself and got nervous about it. Right?
I mean, is that obvious? Or,
well, because he heard the other testimony and they're all going in one direction, and he realizes he zagged while they were all zigging, and he decided, I'm in a risky place here.
The Democrats are actually pretty forgiving of him. They've pointed out that all the documentary evidence, even including his cell phone, where there might be messages or texts that would help revive his memory, they've been taken over by the State Department and have not been turned over. So he's doing this literally just based on his own memory.
Yeah, I don't know how anybody could testify under those circumstances, seriously. I don't know how anybody could testify in a hearing that I don't know. I assume that there's perjury rules. I don't even know what the rules of this hearing are. But I don't know how somebody could testify without having had the chance to look at their emails, to look at their texts, to look at their correspondence, to say, look, it was however many years or months ago. I've done a lot in the meantime. Let me remember what was said. I just don't understand how that could be allowed to happen.
I think what all this means, regardless of how it occurred, is what it means is that what he said and what he knows and what he has now said absolutely did happen. There was a bribe. The president engaged in bribery is the way I look at this. Is that all the other people that are not showing up to be a part of these subpoenas, that are rejecting subpoenas, they know the same stuff. They know that too. They know all of this. And that's why they're not showing up.
Terry, is the IMF bribing? Is the IMF asking for a bribe by not releasing any aid to Ukraine until Ukraine finishes its corruption investigation? As that was reported widely last week, I'm sure it wasn't talked about here. The IMF has openly come out and said, "You're not getting any." What did you talk about it here, Joe? I'm sorry,
but that's no. I was okay,
but
no. Rich, I was amused by
the IMF, the U.S. government.
The
yeah,
no,
really
the,
relatable.
Exactly the same thing. The IMF has openly held up hundreds of millions of dollars to aid to Ukraine because they said you haven't done the corruption investigation we've asked you to do.
Which that happens different. That happens all the time with governments. What you're saying happens all the time, and in a sense, that's true. But what's different here is that this is about the 2020 president. This is about something personal to the president. This isn't about anything that has anything to do with Ukrainian policy or our relationship with them. This is Trump holding up American aid for a personal political reason.
Well,
key difference.
But we don't know that he held up the aid for that reason.
Well, we do know.
Threatening to.
At least three people now saying that he did it, including the person that came back.
With the president of Ukraine saying, no, that wasn't the case, and Trump saying that wasn't the case. But the other thing.
Well, he certainly threatened to, right? I mean,
I don't know that he threatened to. I think he said, we would like you to do us this favor and get it done. And the fact that he's asking them to investigate corruption that had to do with whether it's 2016 or 2020, and the fact that corruption might have had something to do with Joe Biden. Joe Biden's not exempt from being investigated just because he's a presidential candidate. Now, I'm sure that, you know, certainly we've investigated presidential candidates before and they were not considered to be exempt, as in the Trump investigation in 2016. But if you're asking somebody to investigate corruption and somebody is in the middle of that, you can't say investigate everybody except the guy who's my opponent.
But we all know that the only reason he's interested in Biden is because Biden's his most dangerous opponent in 2020. If Biden wasn't running, Biden never would have come up in that conversation. That's clear as day.
And it's not the president's job to begin investigations. If he wants an investigation done, that's why the Justice Department exists. I mean,
by whom? By a foreign power. You know, you want to investigate here, that's one thing. But you're asking somebody in I think, contradistinction to the United States Constitution to do this for you. Let's remember who he's asking.
We ask that all the time. It's going on in the investigation. I forgot the guy's name.
Durham.
Yeah.
Durham.
Yeah, but that's being John. Done through a traditional investigative process through the Justice Department. I mean, I don't like it, but it's being done in a proper way.
Here in this country.
Right. I mean, look what the president.
Let's look at the circumstantial evidence too. The actual ambassador of the U.S. to Ukraine was very reform-minded, anti-corruption. She was brought back under really suspicious circumstances.
She also failed to do anything to curb any of the corruption or get the investigations going.
What does that have to do with it?
You're telling me she's anti. Maybe it was that she just was not effective at her job.
What does that have to do with Donald Trump using taxpayer money to bribe a foreign entity to do something for him?
I disagree with your assumption. I don't think he was doing that, and he has not. What was he doing? He was asking them to investigate, and I don't think there's any evidence that he said you're not getting the money until you investigate.
He held the money until 1 week after the whistleblower complaint became known to the White House.
And so is the IMF doing the same thing?
The IMF has nothing to do with how the U.S. government is doing
the exact same thing, saying you're not getting the money until you investigate what we've asked you to investigate.
The IMF is not an elected representative of the American public.
So it's okay
using
for that.
Taxpayer money
this
as
is
a bribe.
How this is how Trump is going to get out of it. Senate Republicans right
but
here.
I'm interested if that's the follow through and that's the line that we are supposed to believe, then where is the concern about the corruption into and Russian interference in the election in 2016?
Well, I thought that was part of the request, though. Wasn't he asking for the request of the servers?
Ukraine did it, not Russia. That debunked conspiracy theory.
Right. But not and not doing anything about Russian interference overall in the election.
But isn't that part of the investigation into the election? This is all stuff that happened around the 2016 election. He was asking it to
be investigated.
It's all
about validating his win.
Hey Rich,
look, I think it was an ill-advised phone call. I wouldn't have told him to have the phone call. And I think, obviously, you know,
Senate Republican talking point. You got the memo from the White House.
I certainly wouldn't have, believe me, every time Rudy Giuliani opens his mouth, I probably feel the same way you guys feel when, like, Maxine Waters opens up hers. You know, I have to defend this guy. I think he's a disaster.
But Rich, you're right that the governments do this all the time. Our government does this to other governments all the time, withhold aid for something. The difference here is the personal nature of the request and how it affects his political campaign.
I understand.
And
but
not an American policy position. He just wants dirt on Biden because Biden's his biggest threat.
Well, it happens to be, though, that Biden's acts were part of the larger sense of what you're trying to investigate here.
Yeah, but why not look into that in 2016, 2017, 2018? I mean, why is he looking into that when it becomes suddenly apparent that Biden's, you know, beating
him? You don't think it's personal?
I think it is, but I think that I think he's gleeful that there'd be an investigation into Biden and that it's coming up. But the fact that Biden happens to be involved in the transactions at issue, how is he exempt from that? We're not supposed to ask for that. We're not supposed to do it because this guy's running for president.
Exempt from where? Exempt from where? You want to do it here? Okay, it stinks. Do it. But when you ask a foreign power to do it, that's what this is all about.
We ask foreign powers all the time.
We did it in 2016, that's for sure. Help us out with the emails here, and this is the second time we've done it. He invited the Ukraine government to be involved.
The Justice Department is doing the same thing right now.
But the Justice Department was not making the call, Rich. That's why he's in trouble right now. He did it. And his power is different than the Justice Department's.
All right. We have to take a break. I hate that we have to take a break, but we do have to take a break. We're late. We'll be right back. Wow. We have a lot of letters. Okay, so good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us on this morning, and we'll get to those all in a moment. The crowd's with you, Rich. like this one. Who says, glad Rich is there. I'm wondering how a non-Senate Republican would devalue all the testimony by officials. Now I know.
Do you guys have any idea the difference between a Republican and an independent? I've never been called anything other than a Republican on this show. Not a Republican, never been a Republican, not a registered Republican. Ran for office as a Democrat. I'm an independent.
Okay, but you would admit that right now, if you were voting, you would vote on the Republican.
I would vote for the current Republican candidate.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
I'm still stunned that you ran as a Democrat ever.
The voters were stunned as well. I came in eighth in a field of eight in the primary.
Stacy writes, listening to Rich Twiston.
My wife wanted to invite everybody who voted for me over for dinner.
And some family members wouldn't have been there.
Well, we would have had to take some leaves out of the table, so it would have been more intimate.
Stacy writes, listening to Rich twist himself into a pretzel to explain away this guy's lies as something other than lies is painful. Based on Rich's stance, it's obvious that there is literally nothing Trump could do that could cause him and all of the other Trumpers to disavow him. The IMF? Question mark, exclamation point. Talk about the apples and the oranges.
I'm not seeing the difference there. I'm seeing two sovereign funds conditioning aid on investing. Well, in other words, not non-private funds is what I'm saying.
We're talking about American taxpayer money.
Yeah, but he is right that we do this sort of thing all the time. What's different is the personal political nature.
And that's very different. I mean, we have
the talk to my personal attorney.
Yeah, that was just dumb.
That's different.
Yeah, that was just dumb.
How can it be legal for the President of the United States to literally take money that comes out of the pockets of you and me and everybody else in this country and use it for his own personal purposes to ask a foreign country to investigate a political rival? That is bribery with taxpayer money. That is illegal, and that is impeachable, and it's corrupt.
Well, Rich, go Terry.
Oh, Rich, says David. The head of the IMF is not asking for a personal favor for her to use to attack a political rival. Then a similar letter from Matt, who begins with, oh, Rich. If Trump were interested in corruption in Ukraine, perhaps he might have asked them to investigate two or three other cases, but he didn't. Nor has he mentioned any other specific case of current alleged corruption in Ukraine. He only mentioned Biden and a conspiracy theory about the DNC server. I'd love a reporter to ask him to name even one other specific case of corruption in the Ukraine, because he can't. Even now.
But those requests have been made by our government as well as other governments, and they involve not only the Biden stuff, but they involve the banks and the mainly the banks in trying to recover money that's not personal.
It's not a personal vendetta by an elected official to try to get dirt on a political opponent.
Hey, listen, I'm sorry that it's inconvenient for you guys that your candidate fell into the crosshairs of a corruption investigation.
It's not inconvenient. If Donald Trump wants to use his own.
Hey, we have 17 other candidates. Don't do that.
Look, Rich.
Hey, I'm an independent too, man. I don't have a candidate.
If Donald Trump wants to use his own personal wealth to write a check to some group to go investigate, you know, Joe Biden, that's one thing. But he's using taxpayer money that not only is taxpayer money, but it was designated to go help one of our allies fight a war where thousands and thousands of people have been killed by the Russian military.
Yeah.
That's what that money was there for. It was there to defend
people. And I was pleased
that
he did that beyond what the last administration
failed
to
do. But he's using it. He's withholding that aid from them. They can't buy the equipment they need to defend themselves because the president wants to use the money to leverage an investigation against a political rival. That is criminal. It's a crime against humanity,
I don't think that's what happened.
It is what happened. We have three people that have come before.
We have three people saying that was their interpretation of a conversation.
No, they said it's what happened. There was no one. No, they said without a doubt that they understood this money was being withheld until an investigation into the Bidens could occur. That's what they say.
Yeah, three people saying that. First of all, I don't know what they said, and neither do you, because we haven't seen.
They've released the transcripts where we can actually see what they said. And one of them came back yesterday and said, oh, by the way, I lied about that. Let me be clear. It really did happen.
Yeah, and have we seen the cross-examination in the transcripts? Have we seen
any? We will.
Was there cross-examination? I was told there was limited cross-examination where they wanted to ask questions.
We will see in a public forum. He will be cross-examined, and you will see it. Will you have an open mind about it, or are you already saying, no, even if he did it, everything you said is right, it's not a crime, it's not impeachable?
I promise you my mind will be at least as open as yours on the subject.
Okay.
Wow. Damn. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue, because I'm having fun. I hope you are, too. We'll be back right after this. Just what?
The show that they like. Men like shows so different than women. Like
you didn't,
Three
you didn't
Stooges.
Like Get Smart,
oh, Get Smart
so
was a great.
So what were you watching then?
That Girl?
I was studying. That Girl, yes, I watched that.
All right. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok is here. Terry Gibson, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Armeo, and Rich Honan. We're having a spirited conversation. We have letters. We'll go to those. Anybody have anything before we go to the letters? All right.
Just bring it on.
Here we go. Roger says, "We do this all the time." That's in quotes. The GOP's willful ignorance perfectly on display in Rich's comments today about the quid pro quo. What it comes down to is that to most Republicans, whatever 45 does is by definition okay. If that's the case, we should just change the U.S. Constitution to explicitly invite other governments to participate in our elections. I'm so tired of this cult of personality surrounding Trump.
See, the funny thing is, while this was all going on, there was an actual substantive thing going on where...
We were talking about Get Smart.
Where everyone, I can't believe you didn't like Get Smart, by the way. That's
so
just a whole
silly.
Different thing.
Yeah, I know.
It was Mel Brooks.
Was it Mel Brooks?
Yeah, and Buck Henry.
Huh.
Go ahead.
But while this was, you know, at the same time this was all going on, there was the whole, the moving of our forces out of northern Syria. And that was something where it not only was it substantive, but like everyone on the right was up in arms against that. And I say this, it's not like everything this guy does, you know, we agree with. I mean, that I think is the thing that is makes his hopes more perilous with his base than anything else. And then the subsequent attacks on the Kurds. But we don't agree with everything he does. We certainly don't agree with everything he says.
Alan, what do you think?
I can't hear.
He doesn't seem to.
Yes. No. Well. I think lots of things. I think I've been shutting up because I've been enjoying the show. To be honest with you, you know, I think Rich is all wrong, but it's great that we have him here so that people can hear him. You know, what else can
that's
I
right
tell
up
you?
There with all due respect, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you can't argue you're really a Democrat and you ran on the Democratic ticket when you basically are mouthpiecing the entire Trump, you know, approach. And I don't want to say anything because I don't want to discourage him from coming back. You know what I mean?
Well, you know what, Rich, you said it confuses me because I don't understand how you're defending the stance of Republicans feeling concerned about the fact that Trump has made the decision to move forces out of Syria. So it's a military concern that you have. But when it comes to a military concern related to Russia, where we are supposed to be aiding an ally with money that has been designated by the U.S. Congress to aid them in their battle against Russia— you're not concerned about the fact that money is being held up?
So as Nancy Pelosi says, all roads lead to Putin.
I mean, they're both military issues. And in fact, you could argue the one related to the Ukraine is even more dire because they're in an active battle right now where thousands of people are dying.
Terry, I don't just look, I was pleased to see that this administration was willing to provide funds for lethal assistance to Ukraine, which I don't think had been provided in the past.
That's not true.
Wait, I mean, was the Obama administration giving lethal? I thought they were not giving. I thought they were not giving that type, what they call lethal support. I thought that was specifically the problem. But either way, yes, I was pleased to see that. Yeah, I would be dismayed to see a delay for any reason.
But it was delayed.
Yeah, it was, and I was dismayed to see it. I don't think it was. Look, we could say the same things over and over again. I understand them premising it on an anti-corruption probe. I think other instrumentalities have done the same thing. I agree with you that, you know, we were talking off air. If he had said it in a different way, we wouldn't be here on this particular thing. You guys would find something
else. But it wasn't for an anti-corruption probe. It was for a probe into Biden. It was a probe into Biden. That's what it was for. Okay.
All right. Let's go to other letters. We go to Jody, who says, "This conversation is appalling. An impeachable offense occurred. There is no doubt that this corrupt president doesn't care about corruption. He only cares about getting reelected and destroying any opponent or country that stands in his way. I can't believe that a panelist is defending Trump's actions by saying that it's all right for Trump to ask Ukraine to investigate Biden as part of the investigation into corruption. Makes me want to change the station at such manipulation of the facts."
Yeah, God help us that 40% of the country or 44% of the country is with Trump. Let's face it. I'm not. I think the guy's despicable.
Wait, you're not?
Nevertheless, that's right.
Breaking news.
Yeah, but nevertheless, because Jody obviously wants to change the channel, change the station. I don't like that, I'll be honest with you. I don't like that. I mean, you hear something you don't like, you're going to change it. Well, then just go to MSNBC and never turn it off. This is going to be an honest broker, and we are going to have Rich hone in on as much as he wants to come on, as Joe has already said, because it's terribly important
that everybody gets to hear the arguments and to reject them if they want to. I mean, it's that simple. I don't like that letter.
Well said, Alan.
Elias says, great to see Rich back on the panel. What is damning to Trump is the ambassador's statement, which states that the Ukraine only needs to announce the Biden investigation for the missiles to be delivered. In other words, no real investigation needs take place, only a public smear about the Bidens.
Yeah, I agree with I'm not going to say it's damning, but I thought that was that was actually more troubling to me than the other thing that they want. What they allegedly what was wanted was a public statement that there was going to be. See, I thought that was a much stronger point.
Washington
I would have
hung
my head
on that. The script that they want it read.
I thought that was a more damning point. I agree with that. It's one thing to say, hey, we want you to investigate corruption. Whoever gets swept up in it, you know, we could argue about that. But it's another thing to say, we want you to say it's another thing to say, we want you to say you're investigating corruption without really doing it. That to me was actually far more troubling. I agree with that. With Elias? Is that who it was?
Yes. Daisy says, Trump lives and breathes conspiracy theories. This is our president. He's a flat earther. He still wants to believe because Paul Manafort and Putin told him so that Ukraine hacked the DNC emails. Why? So Russia's off the hook. This is not a man who should be president, and anyone who defends him is defending the erosion of our democracy.
But that's an election question, I think, more than it is a. I mean, Rich can defend this particular point. I mean, that's a question for the 2020 election, whether or not he deserves to be, or is fit for the presidency. I don't think that's necessarily.
But Terry says that's also an impeachment question. So that would be, you know, that's more of a judicial, a quasi judicial, right? You're saying that this is something, Terry, that you know that could lead to impeachment. So that would be not an elective issue.
Well, the Ukraine phone call apparently is leading to impeachment. I mean, it seems to be what we're doing right now, isn't it? I think it's impeachable. I think it's a crime. So I hope that he's found guilty, and you know that may not happen. But I think this is a process we have to go through.
Eric says, for Rich, no, American presidents do not all the time ask foreign governments to investigate their political opponents. That is what dictators do.
What I meant to say was. What goes on all the time is that we condition release of aid on either corruption investigations or making sure the aid gets to the right place.
You see, do you want to update your testimony?
Yeah.
We go to Neil, who says, you actually want us to believe that all of the corrupt countries and corrupt people in the world, it was just chance that Trump went after Biden and Ukraine, not political? Please, how stupid do you think we are? Besides, Sunderland's testimony shows that a general announcement that Ukraine would investigate corruption wouldn't do. It had to mention Biden by name or no aid and no meeting.
Wrote the script.
Yeah.
I'm still so interested in Sunderland. Here's a guy, I believe, am I correct in this, who gave Trump $1 million during the
campaign? It to the inauguration campaign.
Yeah, $1 million. Think about that. And still feels he has to come back and issue an apologia. Here's my issue. Something happened, and we don't know what it is.
I agree with Alan on that one. Yeah. Alan said something happened that we don't, you know, we don't, there's more to this. And I'd like to know what it is.
Let's go. Mark says, in my opinion, Alan made a grave error this morning when he stated that although it was inadmissible to request a foreign government investigate Biden, but that if it would be fine for the president to order the Justice Department to investigate Biden, did I mishear?
Wait, what did I say about the Justice Department?
I don't really understand the letter.
I never said
it. In my opinion,
go away.
Alan made a grave error this morning. Although it was inadmissible to request a foreign government investigate Biden, would be fine for the president to order the Justice Department to investigate.
I never said any such thing. It's ridiculous. Why do people?
I think actually, I think Rosemary is actually the one who said it, that if it was the Justice Department, we wouldn't be in this if the Justice Department had looked at it.
Yeah, and it was actually Terry.
Who
said, we're passing the buck. Yeah, you said
I think it was Chris.
You said, I wouldn't agree with it, but if he wanted to investigate, there's a process to do it. It would be through the Justice Department.
Right. I mean, Justice Department is there to do investigations.
Not asking, asking another country's leader to do that
work
for them.
Right, exactly.
And I agree with it, although I don't remember saying it, but I I could have.
Yeah, I think I remember your clarification, actually. So, then, let's see, we go to Stuart. Thanks for having Rich on. He shows courage and good humor to appear. However, I do disagree with him on this. It is a fact that Zelensky was told that the Ukraine would receive the aid if he read a script written by the White House on CNN announcing an investigation into Hunter Biden. That seems fairly indicative of what Trump wanted. It had nothing to do with actual corruption in Ukraine. It was all about making Biden look bad. And in response to a previous letter, Rob says Trump was directly asked by a reporter what other Ukrainian corruption he was asking about, and the answer was, I'll have to look into that. He then went on to ask China to investigate the Bidens as well, akin to asking Russia to look for the emails. China publicly declined to get involved in our domestic politics. To not see that he was only targeting Biden and attempting to exonerate Russia as being willfully ignorant. And final letter on this topic, Kim says no one has mentioned yet that the entire investigation into Joe Biden alleged corruption was dealt with long before Giuliani and Trump began pushing it. This has long been referred to as a debunked theory, which we have been talking about, but that's all right.
Can I just ask everybody a question? And really, what is Trump up to with Biden right now? Does he want Biden to be the candidate? Is he scared to death of Biden being the candidate? What do you think he's up to?
I think he's won. Biden has been hurt by this, has not responded well, and he's lost both money getting power and support, according to polls. And so it looks now like he'll be running against this progressive, which is exactly what he wanted.
I think that's part of what's so silly and so kind of ironic about the whole thing. He was so worried about Joe Biden, and he might have been doing well to get Biden. I mean, Biden has not seemed up to the task of running a presidential campaign.
Well, it's like
and
Nixon yet, who did all the
And yet he's ahead in all the
polls.
Wait,
polls. You guys don't see Biden as still the Democrat with the best chance?
I do.
At the moment, yes,
I do.
Falling fast.
I do. I mean, the polls still show that nationwide.
I mean,
he does, but
right?
but
I think the first
they're
primaries.
Not so solid that I'm I am concerned. I'm concerned.
It's not predictive. It's not who's going to win. It is Biden as a moderate more capable of election than a progressive? I think that's the question.
I think a moderate clearly is, but it has to be the right person. I mean, it comes down to the person more than anything.
Well, you got anybody in that group who is?
Amy Klobuchar.
Yeah, I would probably say Amy Klobuchar.
Well, forget that.
I mean, she's not in the actual mix, right?
I know.
Nah.
I mean, the only people in the mix.
But the whole thing is very fluid.
It's very fluid.
That's the whole thing.
Is it, though? I mean, is there really anybody besides Biden, Warren, and maybe Sanders?
Do you think Biden seems up to this task that he has been? The whole way he's.
I'm not sure how hard it is, judging by the last few.
One of the things that makes it fluid is that if you look at the recent New York Times poll that was done, that they released. That was done by Siena and who else did that?
The New York Times.
Yeah. So that one of the things about that poll that showed how fluid it was is that so many of the people that said they would be willing to vote for Biden if he was a candidate also said they would be willing to consider another candidate. So if you look at those polls where it says other, you know, the other unknown candidate actually gets a lot of support, meaning that these voters are still willing to consider somebody else that is not in the race yet.
In the top spot.
Yeah, they're willing to do that. So that's what makes it so fluid.
Is that realistic, though? I mean, who would it be?
I don't know if it's realistic.
Well, we know who the potentials are here.
Oh, Hillary Clinton.
Well, that's not going to happen.
Listen to talk radio, it's going to happen.
That ain't going to happen. But I do think Bloomberg keeps getting mentioned again and again.
No, I think Bloomberg is a terrible idea.
Well, you may think it, but every time people... start to talk about this, a moderate who ran New York, according to some, Bloomberg's name keeps coming up with a lot of money. Of course, he has a lot of money.
I don't know. I would take Biden and Warren and give you the field, and I'd give you odds on that.
What do you mean? I'm sorry.
I mean,
will be the nominee?
If I were a betting man, I would say, I'll give me Biden and Warren, and you can have everybody else. Whoever it may be, and I'll still give you odds. I'll give you 2-1 on that.
Well, I still think it's too soon to
candidate.
It's too soon to
not president.
And say what? Oh, no, I'm talking candidate.
Yes, yeah.
It's too soon to make that bet, I think.
Really?
Yeah, because every day that the news goes on about the impeachment trial and about the Biden investigation, I think it really damages Joe Biden.
But he always bounces back, Terry.
But at some point, you can't bounce back anymore.
The money's an issue.
We'll see how far that bounce works. So I just think it's too early to make the bet you're proposing there.
Really?
Well, he's going to lose in Iowa. He's going to lose in New Hampshire.
Well, I'm not going to give you odds later. I'm just going to give you
now or nothing. All right. You know how this game works.
Okay. So what happens when it goes? What happens when it goes to South Carolina? That's right. He'll lose in Iowa. He's going to lose badly in New Hampshire.
And that's the big question. Do voters in South Carolina stick with him that long? I mean, part of why people are supporting him is because they think he's the candidate who will win. If he has a couple losses under his belt, that reputation may fade.
Even his black support comes from the idea that they want to beat Trump. So if he loses really, really badly, comes in fourth, as some of the polls are now showing him, will that support continue or will they begin looking for someone who could?
I think that the polls that Terry's referring to that Siena and the New York Times released this week should terrify Democrats. I mean, Trump is winning in
everywhere.
Most of the important swing states.
Yep.
Yep.
We are terrified.
I was going to ask another question.
No, please.
So who's going to be the vice presidential candidate?
We don't know.
That's just so far beyond
it's a year away.
It's so far beyond. We can't answer that question until we actually know who the candidates really are. I mean,
we're Democrats. We're a mess, Rich.
I think the fact that Democrats are still willing to consider another candidate that doesn't
look how that ended up
is a big deal.
And whoever the nominee is, they could pick anybody. I mean, no one would have seen Sarah Palin coming. I was going to say that.
I was standing in an airport, and all of a sudden they say. All of a sudden, I'm saying Republicans pick candidate Sarah Palin, and everybody's looking at each other in this airport, looking up at CNN.
And that was a good idea for all of 5 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, that's like an owl flew into the airport. Who? All right, we're out of time. My thanks to everybody. Alan, thank you very much. Terry, Chris, Rosemary, Rich, always good to see you. We'll be back after this.